When I first started working on the boats in the late 60s, companies, they really didn't have any safety programs. It was up to the individual not to get hurt. The mate kind of looked out for the guys to make sure they didn't go overboard or hurt themselves. But that was about the gist of a safety program. The mate looked out for you. Or the captain or pilot would try to keep you from hurting yourself. But that was about it. As I mentioned earlier, companies looked at lost time injuries and accidents as the cost of doing business.
Yeah.
And a lot of them bid that into their contracts. If they had a contract moving grain out of the upper Mississippi River with a grain company, and it was for 2 years, they would figure in the cost of fuel, insurance, wages, and benefits, maintenance on the boats. They would figure all these things in, and then they would figure in a certain percentage of that as lost time injuries and accidents. It was just put in the contract. And that they would issue their bids. If they had a pretty good accident rate, they were, quote, pretty lucky, that bid might be a little lower than the other guy.
So, I mean, putting it in the bid means you're charging it to your whoever's contracting you.
Your contract, your customer ate up part of that cost.
Yeah. So how much of it do you think was about cost effectiveness, as opposed to just a genuine kind of revolution that happened?
Well, today, it's pretty easy to have a $100,000 accident. Mm-hmm. It's not that, I mean, that's not even a big accident when you think about it. Mm-hmm. And $100,000 is a lot on the bottom line. That's where it comes off of, right off the bottom line. So when they began to realize that, companies began to work toward reducing or eliminating lost time injuries and accidents. But, you know, and back during that time too, a lot of our equipment was, I sometimes wonder how we got up down the river, but our equipment was, some of it was World War II surplus. The first boat I ever worked on, the engines in that boat were World War II surplus engines, diesels. And they didn't have gearboxes, and they didn't have clutches, and the way they were called direct reversibles. Mm-hmm. And the way they worked, when you were in the head position pushing, the engine ran ahead. Well, when you wanted to stop or maneuver the vessel, you had to pull it back and kill the engine, and you reversed the camshaft on the engine and started the engine up, and the engine run backwards. And that's how you handled or maneuvered the boat.
Yeah.
There were no clutches or gearboxes. And our searchlights, they worked, they were also World War II surplus. They were called carbon arc. And that's basically what it was. It was two pieces of sticks of carbon, one larger than the other, and they were fed toward each other with a mechanism that as soon as they got close enough to arc, like a welding machine, mm-hmm. that arc, or that spark, fired a reflection off of a concave mirror, and that was the way the spotlights worked. And they were good for about 3/4 of a mile, maybe a mile at best, and they had a yellow or orange looking beam to them. And there was a lot of maintenance to them. Every Sunday you had to pull them out and clean them and reset them and adjust them. And it was just a lot of maintenance to them. And then we had paper charts that the guys kept on board the boat, and they kept little notes in them and everything. And then we had a flashlight. We could look at those paper charts at nighttime and hope for the best. But, equipment has changed so much over the years.
Mm-hmm. How much of that is technology, and how much of that is the industry professionalizing?
it's almost, you know, there's a lot of technology now. The searchlights are what they call xenon bulb lights. Radars are so much better than they were. We have electronic charts that we can use to help us. We have AIS that, again, it helps us to identify where boats are and where their positions are. And it's just a lot easier today to navigate than it was back